Hey, it's Larry Gons. Welcome to the bi-weekly Q&A calls for Inner Circle students. How is everyone?
Great.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I'm just going to jump right in. I know we got some people on the call and some people will stagger in as the night goes on, but does anybody have a deal you're working on or any kind of question that you have?
Not at this time.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of people that just like to listen in. But this is the bi-weekly Q&A call, your chance to get your questions answered and, you know, find out what other people are doing. So anybody that has a question, go ahead and jump in.
Hi, Larry. It's Daphne Adams.
How are you?
Doing okay. I've got a deal that originally we had hoped was going to be a rehab deal, but after we got in there, looking at the foundation on the property, found out that the numbers were not going to work for a fix and flip.
Right.
But we determined that there's still enough room for a landlord.
Okay.
If they want to come in and they can get a loan on the property and then get the foundation fixed and then do whatever they want to do on the interior and exterior repairs, there's still plenty of room after they do that to have equity in the property.
Okay, good. So you're going to wholesale it to a landlord?
Yes.
Okay, good.
So,
that's great. Did you have a question?
Contract that I'm going to do between me and the seller, which is then going to be assigned to, you know, another investor.
Right.
We know that already going in.
Right.
This couple was nice enough. I didn't have to rush to get anything under contract because I knew that they only wanted to work and talk with me and figure out how we were going to be able to get the deal done.
Right.
They're just looking. They have a loan on the house, and they're just trying to get out from under their loan.
Say that again. They have a loan, and they're just trying to get out from under the loan.
Right. So they don't want to make any money out of the deal. They're just saying whatever you can make, if you had been able to do it as a fix and flip.
Right.
You can go out there and wholesale it off and make a wholesale fee on it.
Sure.
You've put the time into it. You go make the money on it. We
right.
just want out for this loan because we want to devote our time to more missionary work.
I'm with you.
So, and I've never done a contract that was from the start. We've had sub-2s and things that we've done, but we've never done a contract quite, you know, like this one where it's more of a standard purchase and assignment. So I wanted to know what type of clauses you like to see in the contract between me and the seller that's going to get assigned, what types of things you don't like to see in there, and things like in a case like this, because everything's being sold to investors, are the sellers still required to do the seller's disclosure sheet? Because
well,
I know that on our Texas realtor contracts, there is an option to check to say that disclosures are not required.
Right. And, you know, sometimes when I'm working with an individual seller, I will still use the BAR form that all the realtors use. The only reason that I do that is because it's something that people are more familiar with. And also, if your seller has any questions and saying, you know, well, you drew up this contract, it's one-sided, you can always say, no, actually it's the same contract that every real estate agent in the state of Texas uses.
Right. And I don't know about all of Texas, but I know that in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, among even investors, everything I've ever seen contract-wise here, investors, they all use the TREC contract.
Okay.
Same thing. We feel like that it shows that you're doing everything the proper way if you use the TREC
Good.
Contract.
Yeah, there's no reason with that. Unless there's a particular reason that the contract would not be allowed to be assignable, you could put your name. I'm sorry?
Right in, you know, best and or signs.
That's correct.
So
write in your company name as the buyer and just put and or assigns beside it.
Okay. And then here, our contracts contain an option where you can do an option period, but it is not an option to purchase the property, it is an option to cancel the contract period.
Say that again now.
Okay. Here in Texas, our contracts, it's an executed contract, but it has built into it an option period. If you choose to use the option period, do an option, and it's an option to cancel, to terminate the contract.
Right.
So you would have, you know, if you want to do 120 days, you could do 120 days option period to terminate the contract, and, you know, you don't lose anything other than your option fee.
What's the difference between that and just having a contract with the due diligence period?
I don't know. It's just kind of the way ours is written. What's that option period to terminate here is typically what's used for the due diligence period.
Well, basically, that's just a way for them to be able to keep your deposit, because they call it an option instead of a deposit, basically.
Well, what we have an option fee, and I can do like a, you can do a $1 or a $10 option fee. Then once you and then after that, then I think the contract, and then of course I think you're still supposed to put down your earnest money at the same time.
Right. Well, everything's negotiable.
Right. Right. And of course this couple is going to let me do like the minimums. You know, they're not going to ask from me for a $1,000, $2,000 deposit. You know,
right. You could put up $100 maybe.
Right. They don't even want that. You know, I mean, if we didn't have to do it, they wouldn't make me do it. I just told them we have to do this for the contract to be legal.
That's right. And I was just going to say, I know you know this, but for everybody else's benefit, in order for a contract to be valid, there must be consideration, and the consideration is the deposit. So you got to put something, even if it's $1.
Right.
So I would definitely make sure you put and or assigns as the buyer.
Right.
And then whatever the minimum is that you want to pay for that, you know, option right or the due diligence period or both, you know, I would do that. And then that way you have a due diligence period, or you can get out if you just don't exercise your option.
Okay. What type, when you're immediately going into a deal and you know that you're going to wholesale it off, you know, you want to be careful because you might not want to put some clauses in there that you might do when you know you're going to rehab a property that's going to protect you a little bit more, be able to wiggle out of the contract if you find some huge repair that wasn't, you know, there to the naked eye.
Well, here's the thing. Whether you're wholesaling it or you're going to rehab it or you're going to keep it as a landlord or retail it or whatever you're going to do, if you've got either a due diligence period or, like you mentioned in Texas, if you have that option period, you know, an option gives you the right but not the obligation to buy something. So.
The right but not the obligation to cancel the contract.
Right. So what you could do is you could, you know, as long as you have that due diligence period and you and or your buyer goes through and does the due diligence prior to that period being up, what regardless of what you're going to do with the property, you could cancel the contract and get your deposit back based on the fact of you had a due diligence period.
Okay. And what is your opinion on the seller's disclosure? When it's a wholesale deal, or do you think I need to have the sellers do a seller disclosure still?
You know, if you're buying from somebody who has lived in the property, yes, but if they haven't lived in the property, you know, we normally don't get them. You know, of course, none of the banks will give them to you because they've never lived in the property.
Right. This couple
when you're buying from banks or HUD.
I opened up a can of worms. They didn't know the problem was there.
Yeah. You didn't know the problem was there?
Well, they knew they had foundation problems, but they had no idea it was as bad as it was.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
An opportunity to go back and renegotiate the price.
Well, on this one, the price is what it is. It's what they owe on the house.
Are they behind on the payments?
No.
Okay.
Because
I was going to say if they were behind, you might be able to do a short sale.
No, they're not behind, and they don't want to do anything to mess up their credit because they have perfect credit.
I understand. That makes sense. Okay.
You know, they're just looking to get, if they can get out from under this. You know, they don't have to sell the house. Of course, now they're in more of a case where they're facing a huge repair bill. They are more now where they have to get out, you know, have to get out of the house. But they just want to be able to get to the point where they can just pack up and walk away.
Right.
That's what they're looking for. When you're selling to cash buyers, do you let them come in? And I've heard the opinion that from some places that, you know, when your people come in, they're looking at buying your wholesale, you know, if they want to start doing all kinds of long inspections and everything, that, you know, you shouldn't allow that because you've already had your people in looking at it and you can show them, you know, your paperwork from your contractors that you've gotten, to not let the cash buyers do, you know, long drawn out time periods. What is your opinion on that?
Now, you said long drawn out what?
Periods of due diligence.
Oh, we typically give our buyers, we try to give our buyers 48 hours because we've done a lot of the due diligence up front. But we also, we will give them an extension and let them do their own because we want the buyer to do their own due diligence. We want them to go out and get their own rehab estimate or whatever. So what we try to do is we try to start lining up buyers as we're continuing to do our due diligence and during our due diligence period. So while we're still in our due diligence period, our buyer is doing their due diligence as well.
Okay. Well, I've already pretty much done the due diligence, you know, on the house myself.
Right.
And, you know, I did the big due diligence piece. The other stuff you just kind of know because you kind of know what paint and exterior and interior are going to be. You don't have to have a contractor to come in for that to give you a good enough ballpark number for, you know, wholesaling it on that.
Right.
And so what do you, from the time that the... So, I mean, you give them 48 hours to do their due diligence before or after they sign a contract with you?
Well, that's, they have 48 hours or 2 days, but that's after they sign the contract. You know, they can get all they want before they sign a contract to anybody, but see, it's irrelevant until somebody signs a contract.
Right, and is their 48 hours for due diligence period on your assignment contract written in? And on the
It says it on the contract.
Okay, but on the contract between you and the seller, or on the assignment contract?
No, the contract between me and my buyer.
Okay, which is the assignment contract, right?
When we're selling, but see, here's the thing: if you are assigning, you won't have a separate agreement or separate contract with your buyer. You just have an assignment, and you're assigning from you. You're assigning the original contract between you and the seller to you and your buyer.
Okay.
So then your buyer is going to be working with your seller after you, you know, when you assign it, but it's all done at closing.
Right.
Yeah.
What do you suggest in a case like this? Because assignment?
Say that again?
On this property, do you suggest, with knowing, you know, the history of the deal?
Well, if you're working with an individual,
yes,
you always want to try to do an assignment because that's the quickest, simplest, easiest way to get a deal closed.
Right. Okay, and that's what I was planning on, was just doing an assignment.
Yeah. Good. Did that answer your question?
Excuse me?
Did that answer your questions?
A few. I think most of them. If I have any others, I'll email them and call Dean tomorrow.
Okay, cool.
So if I think of any others after some other people get a chance.
Oh, okay, sure. Would anybody else have a question that you'd like to throw out?
Hey, Larry, Mark Siegel from Rhode Island. How are you?
What's going on? How you doing, buddy?
Good. I was just kind of wondering, trying to get a better feel. Actually, I'm just getting started, really, with making offers and everything. Talked to Randolph today.
Good.
And he's going to be working with me a little bit about kind of trying to pin down some more of this information. But I'm really curious to see if you feel like there's a, you know, and I know you probably get this question a lot, but if you think there's a better state, you know, one state's better than another state, you know, as far as, okay, maybe Georgia's better than Ohio, or if you feel like, you know, you're just trying to get, I'm just trying to get a grasp on where I should kind of like put my ladder on the building so I don't put my ladder on the wrong building, climb to the top and figure out, oh, this is the wrong place for me.
Right, right. Now, where is it you said you live now?
I'm in Rhode Island,
okay.
But I thought like Missouri would be a good place to look, so I've been kind of focusing on Missouri. I'm just trying to figure out if I'm in the right place. I mean, I kind of went out and did all the homework, you know, buyer's list and transactional funder that's there, and I have a woman that's been, you know, submitting HUD offers for me, and I've probably submitted 30 or 40 offers. And just trying to figure out, you know, is Missouri the right place?
Right. Well, let me first ask this question. What kind of investing are you going to do? Are you going to do wholesale or fix and flip or keep properties as rentals or seller financing?
Trying to do wholesaling to start. And then ultimately, you know, I think the ultimate goal for me is definitely to do, you know, the seller finance. I think that's my gist of what, in speaking with you, I think that's the end goal for pretty much anybody is to, you know, that's like, you know, the best thing you can be is a seller finance kind of deal.
Okay, good. So let me ask you this question. Where in Missouri are you thinking about buying?
I've been focusing on St. Louis, and but I've found like I've kind of like there's only so much that's in St. Louis. Only, you know, like you make so many offers, and then, you know, there might be only be, you know, 20 houses you're going to make offers on, and then, you know, it doesn't seem like a lot of them are sticking around too long. Like, you know, they're extended, but it seems like there aren't ones that are really old or anything like that. It's, you know, where you might be able to get the best, you know, possible offers accepted for
you.
So
when you
say
extended, are you talking just about HUD houses?
Yes.
Okay. Well, remember, HUD is just one source of many sources.
Right.
But I do like St. Louis as a market, especially on the lower price. There's a lot
right.
of lower priced houses there in the St. Louis market, but you're going to have to expand your circumference to cover the whole MSA, not just St. Louis, but all around St. Louis as well.
Right, right. And I've been doing some of that, you know, out in Baldwin. There's some nicer areas. I kind of, you know, what I did is I have, you know, seven or eight people that are traditional, you know, buying in the area. And they sent me probably, you know, 35 zip codes that they said focus on these different zip codes. So when I run my searches, you know, I've been
right.
running my searches on those zip codes. But I have really just been focusing on HUD because this is the second part of my question is, you know, even the realtor that I'm dealing with, she said, well, you know, I'll submit offers for you all day long on HUD. That's no problem. It just takes a second. She said, but if you're trying to do these other deals where you're trying to make offers on non-HUD houses, there's a lot of paperwork to fill out, and she's less willing to do that.
Huh. Well,
so,
and that can be true to a certain extent because, you know, some of them are in that mindset. But are you talking primarily bank-owned properties?
No, I really haven't even touched any bank-owned properties at all. You know,
when you're talking to the realtor and they're talking about submitting offers for you, are you submitting offers on REOs or just listed properties that are owned by individuals?
I've only submitted HUD offers. I've not submitted anything besides HUD. So
I understand, but a minute ago you made a comment about if you're going to submit offers in other ways, there's a lot of paperwork involved. What kind of houses are those that she was talking about?
She was just talking about any home other than a HUD house. She said that the process, it's not a matter of, you know, click to here, click here on a computer and then done. She said it's a matter of filling out a form and kind of going through the process, which she said, you know, and it could be her, but then that's the part of my question is, you know, how do you find a real estate agent that, is it just a matter of finding the real estate agent that's willing to submit, you know, 40 written offers for you and do the faxing or the mailing and everything else that goes along with it? Obviously, it is more work. So how do you find the realtors that will do that for you?
Well, a couple of things, okay? when you're talking to a realtor and you're look, you know, you call, say you're calling about a house, you find a house that's vacant, and of course, you know, I don't ever call about them if they're not vacant. I mean, if I see furniture in the house, I just move on.
Interesting. Okay.
That's just the way I do, because I know that it's going to be owned by an individual and they probably have a mortgage and it's either a short sale or they're going to want too much for it. So having said that, I tell the real estate agent, you know, if I call up the listing agent and I talk to him, you know, let me just role play here with you a little bit. I'm going to say, yeah, I was calling about the house, 125 Oak Street. You know, what can you tell me about it? Blah, blah, blah. You go back and forth. Well, you know, based on what you're telling me, it looks like I probably need to be around X, you know, low to mid 30s or high to mid to high 40s, whatever the number is, you know. And then they're going to come back and say, okay, well, I need your proof of funds, or a copy of your bank statement. I need a $500 deposit check. I need to put it on writing. I'll send you a copy of the contract. You sign it, send it back. You know, what I say to them at this point is, you know, I can do that if you want to. That's not a problem. In fact, I can send you a copy of a bank statement that shows I can buy about 30 or 40 of these houses.
Right.
But the realtors that I work with on a regular basis, they typically have the kind of relationship with their asset manager where they can simply shoot them an email, tell them they have a cash buyer in this price range, and see if they would like to put it on paper, because you and I both know that nobody gets paid until the deal closes. Now, let me ask you a question. Do you have that kind of relationship with your asset manager?
Okay.
And that's what I say. Does it work every time? No. But it lets them know that you're working with other people that do, and you know, it lets them know, it kind of puts it back on them instead of on you. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Does that help?
It does. And, you know, the other thing is, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, do you even have to use a real estate agent? If you're trying to just call about a house, you can just, you're just calling the realtor directly. You don't need another real estate agent. You don't, in other words, you don't need a buyer's agent. You're just going to go straight to the source.
Absolutely. In fact, when you're first starting out, if you are calling about a property that you found on the internet yourself,
right,
then if I were you, I would call the listing agent direct. And then two things are going to happen. You're going to find out, number one, is this a property I might be able to buy? But number two is this an agent that I might be able to work with? Because you're going to be saying things like, you know, I'm looking for another good agent that I can work with in this area. And the agents I work with love me because I do what I say I'm going to do and I close deals. And I promise you, I'm going to be the easiest person you ever worked with. We're going to make a lot of money together. How's that sound?
Right.
See what I mean?
I do. All right, last question on, and then I'll give it over to somebody else. Shotgun versus rifle approach as far as the HUD houses go. I tried a little bit of the shotgun approach, and then I kind of felt like rifle would have been a better way to do it. But do you have a preferred method? Do you just do both?
You can do both. You can absolutely do both. It's entirely up to you. We have a VA that does the shotgun approach, and then we have guys in our office that are doing the rifle approach, if that makes sense.
Right. So are your guys competing against each other? In other words, is your shotgun offer sometimes competing with your rifle offer?
No, because once we get a counter offer from the shotgun approach that our VA is doing, then we bring it in-house. And one of our guys starts doing more due diligence to determine how much we can pay.
Okay. All right. And the VA, you know, to have a VA do this, you have to have some kind of real estate agent get on board with you and give away her code or his code.
For the HUD office?
The HUD office, yeah.
Or you can just have them, do it for you. Or you can ask them, you know, if you find a realtor that, you know, you got a good rapport with, you can say, hey, how would you like for me to hire you an assistant to do nothing but sit at the computer all day long and enter HUD bid in your name, so when we get one accepted, or better yet, so every time we get one accepted, you get paid.
Right.
And I'll even pay for the assistant.
Okay.
How about that?
Yeah, cool. All right, good. Thanks, Larry. I appreciate it.
Sure, man. No problem. I hope that helped.
Yep, it did.
Awesome. Anybody else have a question? Anybody? Jump right in.
Larry, it's Daphne. I thought of one other one. What
okay.
percentage deposit do you require from your cash buyers on the wholesale deals?
How much deposit do we require from our cash buyers?
Yes.
Here's how much deposit we require. We want twice of what we paid. So if we put up $500, we want $1,000. If we put up $1,000, we want $2,000. But when it gets to the higher numbers, like if we have to put up $5,000, you know, we probably won't ask our buyer for $10,000, but we will ask them for $5,000.
Okay.
That was a really good question. Anybody else have a question? Anybody? Jump right in. Nobody has a question. Okay, going once. Going twice. All right, guys, I really appreciate you guys being on today. And thank you so much for your business. I really appreciate it. Remember, you got to get out there and make some offers. The market is getting a little bit tougher than it was. So you got to make more offers. You got to do more due diligence. And you got to go out there and dig a little more. We're doing some direct mail now and some other things. So get out there and work and dig for deals and put some deals together. And please remember, call me or email me anytime you have any question about anything. My direct email is Larry@LarryGoins.com. Be sure and put Inner Circle in the subject line, and I'll answer it right away. So I really appreciate your business, and thank you guys so much for being on. And if I don't talk to you before then, I'll talk to you in 2 weeks. So thanks a lot, everybody. I hope you have a great night. Bye-bye, guys.
Thanks, Larry.
Bye.
Thanks.